information is free. There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care. We care. It shows.
The country.
Whether you went on with the diary, or whether you did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Commemorating the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ by telling our children that a giant bunny left chocolate eggs in the night. It's a bad Friday, my friends, and welcome to episode 118 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's April 10th, 2009. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, bringing you all the news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, murder, and mayhem, and the contagion, and a month of violence, quakes, shooters, suicides, and homegrown errorism, Mockingbird Media, embedded messages, Antichrist, camps, comics, EMPs, drugs, planes, shootdowns, toxic dust, terror drills, Bohemian Grove, the Food World Order, MLK, and Kurt Cobain. It's all here on the Bad Friday episode, April 10th, 2009, episode 118 of MediaMonarchy.com.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Just watch for their games.
dancing on our graves. That's the Janet Street Preachers. And that CD was sent to me by my man Dave O'Brien in the UK. That's his band, the Janet Street Preachers, and that's from their new record, Moral Hazard. So, my man Dave sends me news links and updates and headlines from time to time, and now he's sent me an actual physical CD. So, big thumbs up and thank you to him and to you for tuning in to episode 118 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's Bad Friday, April 10th, 2009. My name is James Evan Pilato. I am, of course, the king of the monarchy here, your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com and FoodWorldOrder.com. There's a catch. Due to some technical difficulties, the Portland Radio Authority is currently without internet. So what I'm doing is I came to the studios anyway to do the show as if we were live and broadcasting, because the news doesn't stop because the internet does occasionally. So we are recording live from the Portland Radio Authority studios, and you will still be able to hear the rebroadcast of this episode on revereradio.net, as well as KBFR 93.9 in Boulder, as well as the Pro Free Radio Olympia 98.5 in Washington. And of course, make some contact, FaceSpace, YouTube, Yahoo, IM, Skype, Twitter, and all the little social networking tools. And of course, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org is where you can get the podcast. So, that's one problem with no internet at the moment. I had some difficulties last week with Radio for All and my uploads, so I apologize to any of you who got the same episode served out to you three or four times before I finally gave up. So hopefully that's not going to be a problem this time. And I'm settled in for a nice, long, supersized episode again, kind of coming to you from a vacuum, in a way. The internet is down here, so I'm not broadcasting live. However, I, of course, have all my news pre-organized and ready to roll. I want to again thank Glenn at Cascadia Public Radio for spreading Media Monarchy, the podcast. And also, he's been serving out episodes of The Corbett Report from a man, James Corbett. Had the opportunity to talk to him for a good while yesterday. So that interview, as well as his new episode that's going to be called Food World Order, comes out this Easter, episode 83 of The Corbett Report, featuring yours truly talking about the Food World Order. I saved the Google News page so I can at least hit you with a little bit of the updates going on right now. And of course, as everything is going insane, I'm sure as I'm in here this morning recording this show for you, I'm sure something ridiculous will happen that we'll have to cover a little bit later. But as of now, of course, the negotiations are still going on with the Somali pirates. Just a little update of this story from the Washington Post. The FBI and the U.S. Navy continued delicate negotiations Friday with Somali pirates following an unsuccessful attempt by the American captain being held hostage to jump off of the lifeboat. Basically, Somali pirates attacked a ship, took a hostage, the captain, and they have the captain on the boat. And it's this bizarre little standoff. From the New York Times, suicide attack kills five GIs and two Iraqis in the northern city of Mosul. We also have more death and destruction, murder and mayhem. Tornado roars through Arkansas town, kills three. That's from Reuters. At least three people were killed and a dozen injured on Thursday night when a tornado smashed through Mena, Arkansas. You should, of course, know a little something about Mena, Arkansas, M-E-N-A. Do a little research, Google the Mena connection. and you'll learn about that airport that had planes flying really low over it, and sometimes it looked like they were dropping stuff. So, of course, you know, kids in small towns were always probably interested. So, Kevin Ides and I believe Don Henry, teenagers, went out there one night. They probably saw something they shouldn't have, and they were killed. And, of course, the corrupt coroner in Arkansas, Fahmy Malik, said that they smoked too much marijuana and fell asleep on the train tracks. What was going on at the MENA airport? Of course, that was drugs, my friends, being run by, among others, Barry Seal, who was, of course, connected all the way back to the Texas Civil Air Patrol with David Ferry and Lee Harvey Oswald, and was helping to run drugs into MENA, Arkansas. Who was the governor in Arkansas? That's right. It was Bill Clinton. Drugs flying in and out. But boy, how I digress. That's just a little bit of the updates. It's not something to really toot my horn about, and again, I just track the news and I pay attention to the data and the information and the repeats. So you can see patterns emerge. I've been saying on the show for several weeks now that we were heading into a murder and mayhem spree. I thought it would be quite so chaotic. So about a month ago, I noted that we were heading into the time that seems to have a lot of mass shooters and school shooters and family murder suicides and all of those things. We have seen it in spades, and we still are hurtling towards the somehow apex of whatever this is, the copycat effect, Manchurian candidates, recession rage, God knows. But for some reason, it always seems to culminate around the 19th and 20th of April, where, of course, we have events throughout recent history that include everything from the failed Bay of Pigs invasion and all that that entails, of course, Kennedy firing heads of the CIA afterwards. And then, of course, those same guys were appointed to the Warren Commission to investigate his murder. But again, I digress. April 20th has the Bay of Pigs. And the 19th and 20th, Waco, Oklahoma City, Columbine, Hitler's birthday, Patriots Day. We even have the recent Virginia Tech massacre that happened on April 17th. So we've been tracking this, and this is going to be heavy, and we're going to go really into it. In doing some research, I found an amazing video up on YouTube on the channel Accountability for All, asking the question, is mass murder contagious?
What's causing these bizarre murders and mass murders? Is mass murder contagious? Has a neurological chemical gone airborne? Has there been another gate in hell open? I have been telling you for years that this is going to get worse. I believe a neurological chemical virus that drives people mad has gone airborne. This virus opened the door in the brain to the gates of hell. Hell has been unleashed. The mad scientist has done it this time. In the 60s, they had everybody making love, free love, like rhesus monkeys. Now they got everybody going crazy and killing everybody. Call me what you like and believe the lying media. One day you're going to wake up and your children are going to be standing over your head with a gun. I keep telling you to observe the skies and see what's going on around. There's a reason why people are killing, and it's not what you think. On March 29th, 2009, a mysterious boom and light flashed over the skies. The National Weather Service said there were reports of light and the beam was coming from Maryland to North Carolina. Now just keep that in mind. From Maryland to North Carolina. March 29th, 2009, a gunman burst into a North Carolina nursing home. Kills 8 people. March 29th, deadly shooting in Santa Clara, California. Man kills 5. March 30th, 2009, in Milton, Massachusetts, a man kills his 17-year-old sister and then cuts the head off of his 5-year-old sister. On April 3rd, a man kills 14 in an immigrant center. Also on April 3rd in Massachusetts, a woman begins to stab her 2-year-old daughter with scissors. Now on April 4th, man killed 3 police officers in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. In March, one week they had a mass murder every day of the week. America, we're not dealing with the root cause of mass murder. We're blaming the people when it's clear that there is some neurological chemicals influencing their behavior. The root cause of mass murder is one of those chemical companies is releasing dangerous chemicals that destroy people's minds and drive them mad and pay the media and the politicians to be silent and say nothing and blame the victim.
Accountability for all. That's the number for YouTube.com/accountabilityforall. That video is called Is Mass Murder Contagious? I saw that video and it really struck me. And I've tried to get in contact with the woman or whoever is actually behind that channel, and I have yet to hear from them because I would definitely like to interview them about this subject. They referenced the event in the sky. I briefly mentioned this on a previous episode just as a headline, but let's go into it. WTOPnews.com, the United States Air Force says the bright light was not a man-made object. The flashing lights, this is March 31st, the flashing lights and booming sounds that were attributed to a piece of orbiting space junk were not the result of a man-made object, according to the United States Air Force. In an email sent to WTOPnews.com, Stefan Bocchino of the United States Air Force Joint Space Operations Center says the bright light seen over parts of the East Coast was not a result of a man-made space object. The Joint Space Operations Center tracks more than 19,000 man-made objects in space, but no natural phenomena. It was first believed that the lights and sounds were caused by space junk related to the Russian rocket Soyuz docking with the ISS. If you recall, all that swirled around that. There was debris, they evacuated, they played it down, and then we find out later it was actually a really serious thing. Was it debris that was already there? Was it debris from recent satellite collisions? Continuing, Jeff Chester, spokesman for the U.S. Naval Observatory, was nearly sure the object was the rocket's booster tanks for several reasons. Whatever flashed through the sky followed the exact path the space junk was traveling over the eastern seaboard. Witnesses described the flashes in the skies being colored with yellow and orange, while fireballs usually threw sparks that appear green, followed by trains of blue and red. The loud explosion accompanying the balls of fire in the sky also could be explained if the object was a rocket tank with residual amounts of booster fuel. The flashes and booms that people heard prompted calls to 911 and the National Weather Service. According to WVEC.com, the calls were numerous enough for the National Weather Service to release this statement Sunday night. Quote, numerous reports have been called into this office and into local law enforcement concerning what appear to be flashes of light in the sky over the Suffolk, Virginia beach area. We are confident in saying that this was not lightning and have been in contact with military and other government agencies to determine the cause. So far, we have not seen or heard of any damage from this and will continue to inquire as to the cause. So that's from WTOPnews.com. The Air Force says that whatever was in the sky wasn't a man-made object. And Accountability for All is wondering if it's something in the skies, and of course, we're going to get into the new talk about geoengineering the atmosphere to save us from phony, anthropogenic, man-made global warming. Of course, now it's climate change. Is it what they're doing to the skies? Is it what is in the water and in the food or in the media? Or is it all those things? Murder and Mayhem. Voong, Poplawski, and Flight 3407. So, as we've seen, March Madness and April Assassinations, This now is the copycat effect, Obamanoia and homegrown terror all rolled into one. Gunman kills 13 and himself at a New York immigration center. This is from the Associated Press. A gunman opened fire on a center where immigrants were taking a citizenship test last Friday. That would be April 3rd. In downtown Binghamton, New York, killing 13 people before apparently committing suicide. The suspected gunman carried identification with the name of 42-year-old Jiverly Voong, J-I-V-E-R-L-Y-V-O-O-N-G. Jiverly Voong of nearby Johnson City, New York, a law enforcement official said. But the name is an alias that the man has used in the past, said the official, who was not authorized to speak publicly and was talking on condition of anonymity. It obviously was premeditated, said Binghamton Police Chief Joseph Zikuski, noting the gunman blocked the rear exit with his car. He made sure nobody could escape. Police did not mention a motive. Representative Maurice Hinchy, whose district includes Binghamton, said the gunman recently had been let go from IBM, International Business Machines, in nearby Johnson City. The man entered a foyer at the American Civic Association and shot two receptionists, Zikuski said. One receptionist was killed, but another pretended to be dead, then crawled to a desk and called 911. Police responded within 2 minutes.
Reports of at least four people shot at the American Civic Association in Binghamton, New York. On the line with us right now is Bob Joseph, and Bob is the news director of WNBF, and I trust that's in Binghamton, correct, Bob?
Yes, we're in Binghamton, just a few blocks from where the shooting began.
Just a few blocks?
Yes.
Okay, if you would, I could run down the information that we have, but what is the latest from your report?
Well, police still have buildings surrounded, and we have had unconfirmed reports, but reports from two separate sources who are in a position to know that there have been multiple deaths at the American Civic Association. We've been told by police sources and others that perhaps as many as 12 or 13 people may have died in this shooting rampage. That has not been officially confirmed by Binghamton City Police. We do know that four others were taken to nearby hospitals, but there is this possibility that a dozen or more people may have died within the last 2 hours.
And remind us again, because that's startling, remind us again of the sourcing as you know it so far on that report.
One is a cop, a city official, and another is a person linked to another police agency, and they both indicated separately that at least 12 people had been reported dead.
And do we know, Bob, whether or not we're getting this information from folks who have contacted the police from inside, who may have been a part of the first wave of folks making 911 calls? Do we know that kind of information?
I don't know the source of that. The person from the city was in a position to speak with the police who are directing this situation. So
yeah.
They would have been in that position to know. There still may be as many as 40 or more people who are trapped inside the building as this situation has evolved into a hostage situation.
Tell us about this building for folks around the country, the American Civic Association building. What goes on in that building?
Well, a lot of classes for those who are new arrivals to the United States. Many people learn English as a second language by going to classes there. There's also preparation that goes on for people who want to become citizens of the United States. They are frequently visited by people of so many different countries. Dozens of countries are likely to be represented at the Civic Association daily.
And Bob, if you would, you're close enough, or maybe you had an opportunity, you indicated that you're close enough. Can you describe the scene either that you're seeing or the scene that you witnessed a short time ago?
Well, I can tell from speaking with Binghamton Mayor Matthew Ryan that the scene within minutes turned into one of just flooded with police. The Binghamton City Police, the New York State Police, and Broome County Sheriff's Department had officers on the scene. within minutes. In fact, the police chief was there about 6 minutes after the initial call came out. He's the one who deployed the SWAT team moments after the shootings were reported. They've been told that the suspect is being described as an Asian male in his 20s. He apparently is armed with at least one short gun. We also received information that the man, before he entered the American Civic Association through the front door, parked a vehicle behind the building to block the back door exit, so anybody who tried to flee once the shooting erupted would not be able to get out that back door.
Well, that speaks to premeditation. That speaks to a plan to carry out what is shaping up to be a very horrible attack.
Police in New York say they found the body of a gunman who has killed 13 people at an immigration center. The man described as Asian injured more than 20 and held hostage a dozen more. For more on the story, we're joined by a correspondent in the United States, Alena Milkovsky. Hello, Alena. Thanks for joining us. Now, could you bring us some details on what has happened and what we know about the shooting?
Well, officials have now said that 12 or 13 people have been killed in this incident today in Binghamton, New York. This is a relatively small college town in upstate New York. As well, the gunman has been found dead inside of the building with self-inflicted wounds to the head. Now, we don't know any other information about the gunman other than he is a 42-year-old male of Asian descent and also himself from upstate New York. But without any information, we still can't say what a possible intent could have been behind this massacre. But police and officials are now saying that there are no other shooters involved, and that the area is secure. The remaining hostages were taken out of the building, and there are about 20 people wounded that are being taken care of in nearby hospitals and doctors.
I mean, I heard there's a sizable Russian community in Binghamton. Do we know yet if any Russians are involved?
We don't have any information about the victims, but this incident did take place at an immigration center. What they did here was help a lot of new immigrants and refugees to learn English, to gain information about the United States. And actually, the group of individuals that was in the building this morning was there studying for their U.S. citizenship exam, but we still don't know any details about them.
Let's now talk a bit on that on a broader scale. There have been a number of similar shooting incidents recently. Will that bring more pressure for tighter gun laws in the United States?
Yeah, this isn't the first incident. Just last Sunday, there was another shootout in a nursing home in North Carolina. So it does seem like these types of events are becoming more frequent of late. And also another detail is that recently, gun sales are at record highs here in the U.S. A lot of people seem to be showing a lot of anxiety and uneasiness over the economic crisis. However, Obama hasn't made any mention of tightening up gun laws, but I think that with the recent incidents, people are really going to expect some kind of reaction.
Kind of sounds like problem, reaction, solution. So the second part of that clip was from Russia Today. So within this initial posting of the immigration shooter, Jivrily Boong, we have links all around the world to Russia Today, as well as Press TV out of Iran, and then we also have the Washington Times and the Associated Press, and on and on. They, in Russia, of course, called it immediately. Is this going to play into tightening up gun control? Of course it is. It's also, I think, important to go back to always some of the earliest reporting of situations like this, because a lot of times it's where you're going to get some of the interesting information. Now, the other side would say, no, that's the least reliable stuff. In a lot of situations, it's before the official story has been set into stone. So it was interesting to hear in the first part of the clip there, they say that, oh, he's probably in his 20s, but later he's 42. Seems like a pretty big difference, but again, not splitting hairs on that. We mentioned, of course, IBM. Initially, IBM denied being linked to the Binghamton gunman. So, from eWeek.com, Binghamton gunman reportedly laid off. IBM denies the link. However, of course, as a little bit of time went by, they did have to admit that, yes, Jivrily Boong did work for International Business Machines. And, of course, they call themselves the Solutions Company. We call them the Final Solutions Company. Of course, IBM, with their Hollerith punch card systems, literally orchestrated and let the streamlining of Nazi death camps happen. They would have never have been so organized without IBM's punch card system. Documented fact. So IBM denies the link to Binghamton gunmen, but the new boogie-boogie man, the Pakistani Taliban, Masood, and that last name is M-E-H-S-U-D. We, of course, mentioned him last week. You got to see the photo of him. His long, crazy hair. He looks like a crazy guy. Be scared. He called up Washington to take credit for the Binghamton shooting spree. Of course, ridiculous on its face, but like a lot of these situations, things maybe get pulled off by black ops. And like they say in the pilot episode of The Lone Gunman, the spinoff from The X-Files, in that first episode where a rogue group within the military-industrial complex hijacks jets with remote control to crash them into the World Trade Center to kick off the clash of civilizations. When the old man's talking to his son, he's like, you know, we do this, and you'll have every tin-pot dictator in the world just clamoring to take credit for it. So the Pakistani Taliban head tried to take credit for the New York shooting spree, and of course he recently, when we mentioned him last week, vowed amazing attacks on Washington soon, and he was replied to with drone fire. The other big shooting, and again, these stories are all connected, and they tie into the greater scheme that we see, and we'll start to break it down as we go through these. The second big one was, of course, I think the very next day. Gunman lying in wait kills three Pittsburgh police officers. Again, the original report here from the Associated Press. A gunman wearing a bulletproof vest and lying in wait opened fire on officers responding to a domestic disturbance call last Saturday, April 4th, killing three of them and turning a quiet Pittsburgh street into a battlefield. Police Chief Nate Harper said the motive for the shooting isn't clear, but friends said the gunman had recently been upset about losing his job and feared the Obama administration was poised to ban guns. Richard Poplawski. P-O-P-L-A-W-S-K-I. Richard Poplawski, 23, met officers at the doorway and shot two of them in the head immediately. An officer who tried to help the two was also killed. Gunman lying in wait kills three Pittsburgh police officers.
But reports say that five Pittsburgh police officers have been injured in a standoff stemming from a domestic dispute at a home in Stanton Heights. Joining me now on the phone, David Raleigh from KQV Radio in Pittsburgh. David, welcome back. You were speaking with us earlier. First of all, David, we are also getting reports that there are officers that have been killed in this standoff. Do you know anything on that front? Can you confirm or deny that?
Yes, at this point we have confirmation from the medical examiner's office of two fatalities. There are reports, and some people confirm that another police officer has been considered his first fatal wounds during this incident, which started shortly after 8 p.m. in the Stanton Heights neighborhood of Pittsburgh, where apparently police were going to answer a domestic violence call. Gunshots rang out shortly after that. So at least one of the wounded officers was in a position where other officers could not retrieve him due to the fact that it was still an active situation and he was in the line of sight of the gunman. We do not know if those people have been recovered. I do see at least two vans from the medical examiner's office where they have the press barricaded off. That way they get through. We are right behind the command post where it's been set about two blocks away from where the shooting happened. We have just been briefed by the Pittsburgh Police Public Information Officer, Diane Richard. He did give us confirmation that Suffolk was in custody. The negotiations that have been ongoing since the situation has started did bring some resolution to the situation. We will be getting more information at a press conference later this afternoon, but again, at this point, we know at least two Pittsburgh police officers severely injured, possibly a third. We are waiting for more confirmation on that, and we're also trying to find out more information about the gunman. At this point, a 23-year-old man who lives in this neighborhood at this point. That's what we have.
Okay, and one more time, David. He is in custody, this 23-year-old. Now, we have a name. Do you have a name as well? I've actually read it out on the air. A suspect, not sure about the spelling of the last time. I just got a phonetical last name. Do you have a name as well?
I saw this one man who was going to school with a young man. I got the name Rich, but I didn't get the last name because I was trying to get swings done for TTV as well.
Okay.
So I have the last name, but I don't have a Rich name. We get a 23-year-old young man here in custody at this point. That's what we have heard.
Yeah, David, the name I'm getting, you said Rich, and so what we have is via WPXI, Richard Pavlovsky is the person. You've had that name? Okay. So that we believe to be the shooter who is in custody at this point, having been shot in the leg during the standoff. You know, David, when you hear about a domestic dispute, it just sort of comes to mind, you think, dispute between marital partners or people living together. In this case, we understand it was something between the suspect and his mother. He lived at home with her. Do you understand that to be the case?
No, I did not get that information. We did see the mother earlier, and some people were able to speak with her. She told us that he was in negotiations and getting ready to surrender. That was a little bit earlier.
Okay.
But I did not hear that it started with an incident between him and his mother.
Okay, well, clearly, David, want to thank you very much for your insights, David Riley. And this is, of course, a developing story, everybody. Just breaking news right now where we have been told, now just confirmed, at least two Pittsburgh police officers have been killed this morning in the line of duty during a standoff over a domestic dispute in the Stanton Heights area. There may possibly be a third fatality, as many as five officers injured. We're going to go through all the details as they're coming into us fast and furious here on MSNBC Saturday.
I feel I should point out that the music bed to that cut you just heard is the instrumental version of a song from a guy named LP, and that track was Deep Space 9mm. Gunman lying in wait kills three Pittsburgh police officers, and there are more links in just this initial posting from KXMC.com as well as TheStarPress.com and KXMB.com. So the Binghamton shooter, Jibberly Voong, is dead, which is usually the way these things go down. Interestingly enough, Richard Poplawski is in custody. And that's not the last we've heard about the Poplawski case. We're going to cover a couple other things, and we're going to get right back into it. One of the flashback links we should note, just from a few weeks ago, Illinois church shooter's lawyer blames Lyme disease. This, of course, was the guy who went into the church and killed the pastor in front of everyone. He blames having Lyme disease. So, of course, the sort of insanity defense, the Twinkie defense, temporary insanity, even though, of course, in his day planner, he marked that Sunday down as death day. We also always note that whenever we mention Lyme disease, that, of course, according to the documentation in the book Lab 257, Lyme disease was helped along, if not fully created, by the mad scientists at the U.S. biolab known as Plum Island. But more on the recent plane crash, now several weeks ago, of course, that killed 9/11 activist and widow Beverly Eckert. That is, of course, Flight 3407. That's the one that went down in Buffalo, New York. The latest we have from Bloomberg, icing did not affect Flight 3407, this according to the NTSB. So again, from Bloomberg, a Pinnacle Airlines Corporation plane that crashed near Buffalo, New York, wasn't affected by icing, said a U.S. board that continued to probe possible pilot error. The plane functioned normally even after some ice likely accumulated, the National Transportation Safety Board said in a statement. Maintenance records yielded no significant findings. The safety agency also said one of the pilots pulled the airplane's nose up after an alert indicated the aircraft was about to lose sufficient lift to stay in flight. 2 seconds later, the plane rolled and began its fatal plunge. The NTSB statement updates information collected so far in the crash that killed 50 on February 12th. Of course, Beverly Eckert died 7 days after meeting with Obama and 9/11 victims' family members. And he, of course, allayed their concerns. Pinnacle's Colgan Air Unit, that's C-O-L-G-A-N, and I've flown on some Colgan Air puddle jumpers myself. Pinnacle's Colgan Air Unit operated the flight from Newark, New Jersey on behalf of Continental Airlines Incorporated. No cause has yet been determined.
Investigators now say human error may have been to blame in last month's deadly plane crash in Buffalo, New York. Flying in icy conditions, the Continental flight was about 5 miles short of the airport when the plane tumbled out of control and slammed into a suburban Buffalo home. All 49 people aboard the plane and one man on the ground died. Aviation officials originally looked at ice accumulation as a possible factor, but flight data tell a different story. The NTSB says a data recorder shows the plane had slowed to 150 miles per hour when one of the controls began to shake, warning the pilot of a potential stall. But instead of pushing forward and speeding up, which safety experts say would have been the correct response, the pilot did just the opposite, forcing the aircraft's nose up. The company which operated the flight says this latest piece of evidence doesn't pinpoint the cause of the crash, and they stand by their training programs. Investigators say their probe if the flight crew's training and the plane's de-icing system will continue. The NTSB may also be looking into whether the crew was distracted during critical phases of the flight. A 3-day public hearing on the Buffalo crash has been set for May. Ross Simpson, The Associated Press.
We will, of course, be interested in that public hearing in May about what I think is a little bit mysterious. There are a few loose ends and strange things surrounding Flight 3407, and of course we've been tracking it, and again, thanks to folks like Cryptagon and Alex Constantine for staying up on it. Couple flashback links to mention at the bottom of this murder and mayhem. First posting about Vung Poplawski in Flight 3407. We, of course, again, have been tracking the death and destruction now for several weeks, as it's a full-blown media sensation. If it bleeds, it leads. Shootouts, crashes, murder, and mayhem. That's in March. And going all the way back to December 2007, asking the question, military connection to latest mass shooting PSYOP. Well, we can't go there right now. We have to get to the second posting of murder and mayhem, where we get ugly. Quakes, shooters, suicides, and homegrown errorism. First up, updated to the top of this posting, thanks to my man Johnny, and again, thanks to all you guys who send me news links. No, I can't always respond about every single thing you send, and no, I don't post everything, every single thing people send me, but it's definitely worth it, and I definitely appreciate it, all of you who send me news links. Late last night, it happened. My man Johnny sent me the news story from the Associated Press. Teens arrested in shooting plot at a Colorado school. From the Associated Press, two teens arrested in New Mexico on suspicion of burglary and theft had planned a shooting spree at a rural southwestern Colorado high school as early as this week. This according to a sheriff who said he was among the targets. Dolores County Sheriff Jim Martin said Thursday that the main force behind the plot, a 16-year-old, also planned to shoot his principal of Dove Creek High School and Jim Martin's undersheriff, then used the law enforcement officer's weapons to continue shooting. Others at the school, including the superintendent, also were targeted. Martin said sheriff's deputies recovered 7 rifles, including 22 caliber weapons, shotguns, and even an M1 carbine. This all at the Dove Creek home of the 16-year-old, and 3 more weapons where the teens were arrested in New Mexico. It was probably going to take place this week, Martin said. Further research on this story goes to daily-times.com, as well as the Examiner, as well as the Associated Press. Colorado school shootings sure sound familiar around this time of year. And now it's earthquakes. I guess we should be glad that we haven't actually seen, you know, famine and pestilence yet. There was a massive earthquake recently in Italy, in what I guess I would call my sort of homeland. I'm 50% Italian. My dad's family is from Italy. So my heart definitely goes out even though I've never been there. An interesting note on this. This from Wikinews, as well as many other links. Again, like always, I try and give you as much research as I possibly can so you can do your research, so you can help others do research, and it's all there. So there are links in here to the UPI as well as CNN and alertnet.org. But again, originally from Wikinews, scientist predicted the Italy earthquake and he was ignored. A researcher at a Gran Sasso Physics Institute in Italy. His name is Giacchino Giuliani. Last name, of course, G-I-U-L-I-A-N-I. Giacchino Giuliani, a researcher at Gran Sasso Physics Institute in Italy, claims that he predicted the most powerful earthquake that struck the country on Monday, but was dismissed by the authorities as a scaremonger. According to the United States Geological Survey, the moment magnitude 6.3 earthquake struck central Italy at 3:32 a.m. local time on April 6th. At this posting, so far 150 people were killed, with 1,500 plus injured and tens of thousands of buildings damaged or destroyed. A magnitude 5.1 aftershock struck the same region just under 24 hours later. Giuliani claims to have predicted the quake by monitoring radon gas emissions. Last month, cars with loudspeakers drove around the area broadcasting the researchers' warnings that a quake would soon strike. He was then reported to the authorities for making false alarms and was obliged to remove his findings from the internet. The researcher demanded that he be given a formal apology, saying, quote, "There are people who must apologize to me and they must have the weight of what occurred on their conscience." We're all going to probably have to get to the point where we're going to drive around and ride around with loudspeakers. Of course, done to great effect by Alex Jones in Waking Life. The unfortunate update on the Italy earthquake from bloggernews.net, and this is the latest I have for you. Italy earthquake update, 287 dead, and of course, still new powerful aftershocks. And it gets worse. From the UPI, New York suicide jumper lands on a teen after her plunge. A 17-year-old boy was seriously injured after being struck by a woman who leapt to her death at a New York shopping mall. Police said a 56-year-old woman leapt over a third-floor railing at the Queens Center Mall, landing on the unidentified teen, leading to the teen being hospitalized with serious injuries, the New York Post said Thursday. The teen had been sitting in a massage chair on the mall's lower level when he was struck by the unidentified woman, who of course died as a result of the plunge. "I saw the lady on the floor with a pool of blood next to her and her hairpiece," witness John Perez told the Post of Wednesday's incident. "She landed on a kid. They lifted him up and put him back on a massage chair. He was bleeding from his head." The Post said the teen is listed in stable condition at Elmhurst Hospital. Some of the updates go to NY1.com, and they do have some of the updates, and they actually talk to the kid in the hospital, and I'm sure he's actually been identified now. 17-year-old kid hit by a woman committing suicide. Strange days indeed. Costa Rica police are probing an alleged shooting at the recent celebrity wedding of football guy Tom Brady, I think is his name. Costa Rica probes alleged Brady Bunchen wedding shooting, and that's of course some football player and Giselle, the supermodel. The question being, did their security people actually fire at paparazzi photographers. Now we get into maybe some of the causes, or possible causes, or what they want us to think are the causes. from the Washington Post. Some link economy with spate of killings. The carnage that occurred during less than a 48-hour period last week capped a recent string of unusually brazen mass killings, which crime experts say have touched more people and occurred in more public settings than in any time in recent memory. Comparative statistics are difficult to come by, but during the past month alone, at least 8 mass homicides in this country have claimed the lives of 57 people. The factor underlying the violence, some experts think, is the dismal state of the nation's economy. Criminologists theorize that the epidemic of layoffs, the meltdown of storied American corporations, and the uncertainty of recovery have stoked fear, anxiety, and desperation all across society and unnerved its most vulnerable and dangerous. Jack Levin, noted criminologist at Northeastern University, who's authored 8 books on mass murder, says, quote, "I've never seen such a large number of killings over such a short period of time involving so many victims." The simple fact, criminologist James Allen Fox said, is that more Americans are struggling. Which seems to sort of plant the idea that, you know, if you lose your job, you're going to go on a kill crazy rampage. Another ugly headline, this from CBS5.com. A Washington State father killed his 5 kids and then himself because mom was leaving. From the Deutsche Press agency, the same sort of take as the Washington Post article that we just hit, where some link economy with the spate of killings. Multiple victim shootings rise in crisis-stressed U.S. Again, this is from the Deutsche Press agency, always going overseas to get somewhat a better perspective on what's going on in our own backyards. The newspaper and internet headlines in the U.S. had a chilling familiarity last Wednesday. More economic gloom about the mortgage crisis and another spate of horrific killings. Though not all the shootings have been directly linked to economic distress, pundits have ascribed the wave of terrible mass murders, at least in part, to the growth of recession rage. As millions of people lose their jobs, their prospects, their homes, their investments, and their marriages. Another headline from the Associated Press, Alabaman kills his wife, 3 others, and then himself. Angels rookie baseball player Nick Adenhart dies in a hit-and-run accident. This from Deseret News, as well as links to the San Francisco Guardian and more from the Associated Press. Los Angeles Angels rookie pitcher Nick Adenhart, A-D-E-N-H-A-R-T, and 2 other people all died Thursday night when a minivan ran a red light and struck their car. Adenhart, 22, died in surgery at the University of California Irvine Medical Center, Fullerton police said in a statement. He was a passenger in the car. Adenhart's death came just hours after he made his 4th major league start, throwing 6 scoreless innings in Wednesday night's loss to Oakland. His father flew out from Baltimore to watch him start last night, so his father is there, obviously going through a great deal of grief, Angels spokesman Tim Mead said. 3 dead in a hit and run, 1 being an up-and-coming baseball player. Speaking of my backyard, from KMTR.com, Oregon man shoots himself during The Watchmen. A man shot himself to death in a Eugene movie theater just after midnight last Monday. Police say about 10 people were in the auditorium at Regal Cinemas watching the movie Watchmen. About midway through the film, some of the moviegoers told the manager they heard a popping noise like a gunshot. A 22-year-old man was found in the rear of the auditorium with a gunshot wound to the head. Police say the man shot himself and was dead when they arrived. The patron closest to the man was sitting 2 rows away. More on that disturbing story from digitaljournal.com. And again, I'm sure there is a lot to get into. I mean, that pretty much lays it out right there. So whether it's The Dark Knight or The Watchmen, you know, our most popular movies are about the darkness coming for the jokester. Police probe deadly shooting at a Korean Christian retreat, again from the Deutsche Press agency. But now let's get back in to Vung and Poplawski. So some of the updates on the Binghamton shooter from the Times Online, as well as the Deutsche Press Agency, as well as the Washington Times. America sucks, said Binghamton gunman who killed 13. The gunman who shot 13 people dead at an immigration center in upstate New York was a loner who loved guns, but believed that America sucked and fantasized about assassinating the president. He took out his rage on those who were still striving for the American dream, oblivious to his own disappointment, before killing himself. Jiverly Boong, 41, here, had lost his job at the ShopVac assembly plant in Binghamton, a largely white working-class town 175 miles north of New York, when the plant shut last November. He often mentioned that his wife and children had left him, a neighbor recalled. We're going to get into the bizarre surroundings of the Poplawski case in just a moment. However, we also have a big one-day suspension for a Memphis, Tennessee cop that caused a deadly delay.
A Memphis police officer has been given a one-day suspension. One day. Because he delayed a man from getting his dying mother to the hospital. Officer Micah McNinch pulled over the driver for having expired tags. The driver explained his 83-year-old mother in the car was gasping for breath. They were headed for the hospital. Well, instead of escorting them to the hospital, the officer called for an ambulance, and it didn't arrive for 11 minutes. The man's mom died a short time later at the hospital.
My mom not having at least the ability to make it to the hospital, and I have to deal with the image of my mom dying basically in the backseat of my car.
Joining me on the phone now is Clay Bailey. He's a reporter in the Memphis newspaper, the Commercial Appeal. I mean, a one-day suspension for that. How is the community reacting?
Well, most of the people who have gone to our website and left comments seem real upset over the fact that it's one day versus this woman's life. The other side of the Sheriff's Department said that basically the violation of the policy was a judgment call, and it didn't call for any more than the one day as far as the disciplinary action.
You know, we just have been covering a story, Clay, a couple weeks ago about this NFL player in Texas who wanted to go in and see his dying mother-in-law, and the officer detained him in the hospital parking lot, and he didn't make it up in time. Just curious what the sheriff says about the lack of common sense or common courtesy when obviously life is hanging in the balance.
Well, Sheriff Luttrell acknowledged that, you know, there was a bad decision here. It was bad judgment on his part not to listen to what the man was dealing with. He did call an ambulance, which was Mr. Abel's first request. Then Mr. Abel's asked him if he could take him far to the hospital, which is less than a mile away. He could see the hospital from where they were stopped. And the sheriff says it was just bad judgment on this officer's part to stop him for this.
And yeah, so the question is, why would you want a sheriff's deputy who carries weapons and who shows such poor judgment, why would you want someone like that serving on your force? Is there an explanation for that?
The sheriff said that so far, through the 3 or 4 years this officer had been with the department, he had not had any other disciplinary action. He's got a clear record. I think when talking to the sheriff the other day, he said basically he hopes this is a learning experience for him, and the previous good job performance he's had would continue, and this would be a learning experience for him.
All right, Clay. Well, thanks for breaking it down for us. We appreciate that.
Thanks for having me.
A learning experience. Well, hopefully this has been a learning experience. Unfortunately, the learning experience that a lot of people are going to take away from this is what we already know about. And we know that as things probably get worse, we're going to see this get worse. So when we have cases like this, or when we have police tasering people to death, and then, of course, you know, we laugh about it. Oh, don't tase me, bro. That's so funny. Unfortunately, stories like this are only going to drive people more to think, fuck you fucking pigs, so when the shit goes down, fuck you. And that would be the beginning of the end. However, I think a lot of people have noted that if and when the shit goes down, if you will, most of the cops are going to abandon their posts anyway because they're going to go take care of their own families. But let's return to the Poplawski case. the Pittsburgh shooter, Poplawski, was a fan of online conspiracy theories. This gets ugly now. And just as I was thinking about it, it's probable that this guy is alive because he is going to be used. So let's take it from Raw Story. Pittsburgh shooter Poplawski was a fan of online conspiracy theories. The unemployed 22-year-old man who killed three Pittsburgh police officers and wounded two others in a four-hour shootout last Saturday, April 4th, had been heavily influenced by extremist conspiracy theories prior to the incident. According to the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, with a link for you, Richard Poplawski was, quote, convinced the nation was secretly controlled by a cabal that would eradicate freedom of speech, take away his guns, and use the military to enslave the citizenry. He appeared to share a belief that the government was controlled from unseen forces, that troops were being shipped home from the Mideast to police the citizenry here, and that Jews secretly ran the country. So, unfortunately, Poplawski was pretty much right with all those things, except, of course, he blows it at the end with the unified field conspiracy theory of the Jews run it all. Instantly, the smear began, so they started to connect Richard Poplawski because he posted comments on websites like Stormfront, which is an avowed, explicitly racist organization. He also posted comments on Infowars.com, so now we have Alex Jones and Infowars conflated with blatant white supremacist literature and groups. So just some of the links and updates in the Raw Story piece go to more and more audio and video from Raw Story, and again, the aforementioned Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, but that's just the start of the Poplawski smear, a link of headlines that have lots of documentation, lots of audio, and lots of video breaking this down, as we know of right now, running down the list. Media attempts to link Alex Jones to Pittsburgh shooter. Liberal blogs kick into frothing overdrive in reaction to Pittsburgh shootings. We also have the phony left wing claiming that the phony right wing's claims that Obama will take away guns has helped fuel the panic buying of firearms. And they're kind of both right, and they're kind of both wrong. That one's from thinkprogress.org. A long video on InfoWars with Alex Jones talking about the Pittsburgh smear attempts. It's all debunked, though. However, he did post headlines there. But, of course, he didn't really agree with him because he always said, why don't you guys talk about how the Jews run everything? So it's ridiculous on its face. We have more foundation funding attacks. Of course, a lot of the liberal blogs are all funded by George Soros and what have you. Media Matters got into the action, saying that Poplawski was inspired to murder by the new Alex Jones film, The Obama Deception. And the last latest thing I have for you on the Poplawski smear is that Daily Kos actually issued a retraction that conflated InfoWars and Stormfront. Raw Story also did the same thing. However, I read in print in the New York Times mentioning Alex Jones in InfoWars and Poplawski in the same breath. So that's the murder and mayhem, quakes, shooters, suicides, and homegrown errorism. Perhaps a way to wrap up the murder and mayhem. There's a report. It's going to be a longer piece tonight, actually, on 2020, but there's the little sneak preview from ABC and as well from Raw Story, Raw Replay. A month of gun violence. In the last month, we've seen seven shootings that claimed 48 lives, including attacks in Pittsburgh and Binghamton. ABC's David Muir here is going to preview the Tonight 2020 report on the availability of guns and gun violence.
We turn out of the question so many people have been asking, especially over this weekend, what is going on with the gun rampages in America? In the last month, we have seen seven shootings that claim 48 lives, including those attacks, of course, in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and Binghamton, New York. And some new details are emerging about those this morning. ABC's David Muir is here with them.
The numbers are staggering, Diane, and this morning we are getting a clear picture of those two killers. First, the man behind the terrifying chaos in that Pittsburgh area neighborhood. The police were called to the home where 23-year-old Richard Poplawski lived with his mother.
The mother had told authorities she and her son had had an argument. She called police. When the first two officers arrived, she opened the door, not knowing her son was standing behind her with an AK-47 assault-style rifle. Three officers were killed, two others wounded. Police say he also had a .22 caliber rifle, a revolver, and was wearing a bulletproof vest. His close friend told us Pulaski had long feared losing his wife's own guns.
They were all legal. He had about four guns. I've been into people's houses where they have gun cases with 20-some guns. I mean, you know, he had a small amount of guns.
And in Binghamton, New York, the portrait of another killer. 41-year-old Zerli Wong shot and killed 13 people, and then himself, his immigrant services center, where he once took English classes. Investigators believe he was an isolated man who couldn't find work.
Apparently, people were making fun of him, his inability to speak English.
And police say Wong had a weekly visit to a gun range.
We have 32 people being murdered by guns every day in this country. If peanut butter or pistachio nuts or spinach killed that number of people once in one day, they'd be pulled by the FDA.
These mass shootings come nearly 2 years after the massacre at Virginia Tech, 2 years after the Virginia governor and authorities urged lawmakers to close the gun show loophole, where customers can buy gun, no questions asked. For more than a year now, ABC News has followed Omar Samaha, whose sister Rima was among the students killed. The question now is to keep authorities to their word. We visit this gun show in Richmond, Virginia, where we give Omar 1 hour and about $5,000 in cash. What could he buy? Before he's even inside, he's approached by a seller. He buys a gun, no questions asked.
So this is what?
This is a Glock.
So you bought this before you even got in the show?
Yeah.
He was just sitting right outside the door.
Went up to him, how much you want for $450? Here's cash. Thanks. See you later. That was it.
It was a purchase that sent chills for Omar, a Glock handgun, the same kind of gun used to kill his sister Rima and 31 others at Virginia Tech.
Now, the private sellers at these gun shows will tell you they don't have to ask, they don't have to according to the laws, their privacy rights and they say business. And of course, Diane, you know, that was just the first couple of minutes with Omar. You wouldn't believe the question that finally does get asked of him in the parking lot. None of us were expecting.
Right, and we should tell everyone, David, you and I have been working for a year now on a special we're going to be bringing on Friday night, trying to answer some questions, for instance, what kind of gun laws do work, which ones don't work, and also questions about mental health.
And about intruders, whether or not you could protect yourself if an intruder came into your home.
Yes, we're going to take some surveillance tapes of scenes that we've had around the country, some of these gun violence scenes, and tell you who survived, who didn't, what did they do. And also, since there is an impulse to think, if I had a gun, I could protect myself and others. We have an experiment we're going to conduct based on a real incident in which we show you what happens. Some people who've been trained with guns, can they get to them? Can they use them? What really happens and what kind of danger is there to an innocent bystander?
And then 10 years ago, Diane, I know you looked at kids and guns, what they would do. Parents have said, I taught my kids everything. My child won't pick up a gun. We revisit this experiment. Look at the children here. 10 years later with Columbine, Virginia Tech. Have we learned? Have we learned where promises kept? We revisit the experiment with older kids, teenagers, college-age kids, and we'll see what they do when they discover
all these
guns.
Questions being posed. We'll try to answer them for you Friday night, ABC News on a special called If I Only Had a Gun.
It has been a month of gun violence. And I worry that we haven't seen the last or perhaps the worst of it. So again, that full report is going to be on 2020 tonight. If it's better than the smaller piece, I may post it up for you. So we're now leaving the realm of just overt murder and mayhem and death and destruction. But it all segues quite nicely into the media now being allowed to witness the homecoming of a fallen soldier. This, again, from Raw Story and Raw Replay, as well as Military.com and even Al Jazeera. For the first time in two decades, the media has been allowed to witness the homecoming of a fallen soldier. The family of Philip Myers agreed to allow cameras at Dover Air Force Base as his remains were moved from an aircraft in what the military calls a dignified transfer.
Body scenes of fallen American troops evoke strong emotions. And now for the first time in nearly two decades, the media has been allowed to witness these somber ceremonies. The family of Air Force Sergeant Philip Myers agreed to allow cameras at Dover Air Force Base last night as his remains were moved from an aircraft in what the military calls a dignified transfer. The Pentagon recently ended an 18-year ban on media coverage of these ceremonies. Sergeant Myers was killed in Afghanistan Saturday. Just last year, he was awarded a Bronze Star.
Last night, for the first time in 18 years, cameras were allowed to document the somber homecoming of a fallen soldier. He was Air Force Staff Sergeant Philip Myers, a demolition expert, killed by a bomb April 4th in Afghanistan. Last March, he received a Bronze Star Medal for service in Iraq. His wife was the first to be asked and was the first to give her consent to having the media present for his final homecoming.
So the first time in 18 years, what, that, that goes back to, oh, that's right, Gulf War One in 91. Poppy Bush's Gulf War One. So Bush One's Gulf War One, and of course, good old Billy Clinton saw no need to overturn that ban on viewing the coffins coming in to Dover Air Force Base. But now, of course, the Obamasiah has changed things. And we can now see the poor kids coming home who have been sent to die for a fucking lie. Let's just say it. But more on the media. But now it's the Mockingbird media and embedded messages. CIA CNN talk show host Tom Braden dead at 92. This originally from CNN. They should know. Tom Braden, B-R-A-D-E-N, the creator and co-host of CNN's Crossfire, which pioneered the talk show format that pitted a conservative against a liberal, died last Friday at age 92. Daughter Susan Braden said he died of natural causes at his home in Denver. In 1982, Braden took Crossfire to CNN from a local station in Washington and served as the program's host from the left until 1989. Many people believe that Tom created the genre of political talk shows and debate programs that has now been copied and copied and copied, said Sam Feist, CNN's political director and senior executive producer of political programming. Born in Green, Iowa, Braden graduated from Dartmouth in spring 1940 when the Germans overran France. He volunteered to join the British Army, said his good friend and conservative sparring partner Patrick Buchanan. After fighting in the African desert, Braden joined the U.S. Office of Strategic Services when the United States joined the fight, then joined the CIA, because the OSS turned into the CIA. OSS, of course, was for wartime, and then once World War II was over, they said, hey, we need to keep this thing going. So, with, of course, the National Security Act of 1947, which fucked everything, that created the NSA, the CIA, and the surveillance state that we know today. This goes deeper than you think. This isn't just some old media talking head guy. So, let's go even to his Wikipedia page. And we're going to learn more about Tom Braden and Operation Mockingbird. Thomas Wardell Braden, born February 22, 1917, and died April 3, 2009, was an American journalist. He was best known as the author of Eight is Enough, which spawned a popular television show, and as the host of the CNN show Crossfire. In 1940, he joined the British Army. He was later recruited by the U.S. Office of Strategic Services, OSS, with, of course, Wild Bill Donovan and the Dulles Boys. And it was, of course, the predecessor to the Central Intelligence Agency. He moved to D.C. and became a part of a group of journalists known as the Georgetown Set. Braden joined the CIA and in 1950 became head of the International Organizations Division, IOD. His efforts focused on promoting anti-communist elements in groups like the AFL-CIO. From 1951 to 54, the CIA provided $1 million a year through Braden to Irving Brown, a CIA agent in charge of the international relations of the AFL-CIO, and Jay Lovestone, who got $1.6 mil in 1954. So right there you have the CIA giving millions of dollars for CIA guys undercover to infiltrate groups. In this case being unions. While the head of the International Organizations Division, the IOD, Braden played an important role in Operation Mockingbird. Many years later, he revealed his role in these events, saying, quote, if the director of the CIA wanted to extend a present, say, to somebody in Europe, a labor leader, suppose he just thought, This man can use $50,000. He's working well and doing a good job. He can hand it out to him and never have to account to anybody. There was simply no limit to the money it could spend, and no limit to the people it could hire, and no limit to the activities it could decide were necessary to conduct the war, the secret war. It was multinational. Maybe it was one of the first. Journalists were a target. Labor unions a particular target. That was one of the activities in which the communists spent the most money. That's a quote from Braddon about his role in Operation Mockingbird. Braddon left the CIA in November 1954 and became owner of the Oceanside, California newspaper, The Blade Tribune. He became a popular newspaper columnist and worked as a political commentator on radio and TV. He was also at one time a candidate for governor of California. After a 1967 Ramparts article exposing CIA involvement in groups like the National Student Association, Braddon defended the agency's covert work in the student movement with an article in the Saturday Evening Post called, "I'm Glad the CIA is Immoral." Although the Nixon White House initially included him on a list of friendly journalists, his work eventually landed him on the master list of Nixon political opponents. Nixon's enemies list. In 1975, Braddon published the autobiographical book, Eight is Enough, which inspired an ABC television series of the same name with Dick Van Patten in the role of Tom Bradford, the name of Braddon's character in the series. The book focused on his life as the father of eight children and also touched on his political connections as a columnist, an ex-CIA operative, and as husband to a sometime State Department employee and companion of the Kennedy family, Joan Vermillion Braddon. The television series, however, bore little relationship to the book other than naming the original characters after the Braddon family and giving the lead character a job in journalism. From 1978 to 1984, Tom Braddon co-hosted the Buchanan Braddon program, a three-hour radio show with Pat Buchanan. He and Buchanan also hosted the CNN program Crossfire at the show's inception in 82, with Braddon interviewing guests and debating Buchanan and Robert Novak. Braddon left Crossfire in 89. He was predeceased by his wife of 50 years, Joan Ridley Braddon, who died in 99. One of their sons, Thomas W. Braddon III, a reporter on the Aspen, Colorado Daily News, and a specialist in the use of computers in investigative journalism, died in 1994 in a traffic accident near Gunnison, Colorado, at the age of 33. The survivors include the seven other kids, David Braddon of Taipei, Taiwan, Mary Braddon Poole of Arlington, Virginia, Nick Braddon of Washington, Susan Braddon of Tacoma Park, Maryland, and Joni Braddon, Nancy Braddon, Basta, and Elizabeth Braddon, all of Denver, and then 12 grandkids. The last note here on the Wikipedia entry on Tom Braddon, Tom and Joan had an open marriage, and she had notable dalliances with Republican Governor of New York, Nelson Rockefeller, and the one-time head of the Pentagon, Robert McNamara. Operation Mockingbird was a CIA operation to infiltrate groups and place CIA agents, not everywhere, but in important locations to where they don't have to tell everybody what to do. It's not this top-down authoritarian type deal. You get the right people in the right places saying the right thing, and it trickles down, and it mockingbirds down. Tom Braddon, so he started Crossfire on CNN. He was ex-CIA, OSS. He pioneered the idea of having a conservative battle, a liberal, thereby, now many decades, putting this phony left-right paradigm in our face. And it's usually somebody in the middle and somebody far right, not left and right, as they like to describe. Tom Braddon seemed to play his role really well. So CIA, CNN, talk show host, Tom Braddon, dead at 92. And again, there are more links. You can go to Wikipedia, read more about Operation Mockingbird. We've learned all about it. Again, this isn't a conspiracy theory. Operation Mockingbird and CIA media manipulation. But let's go from Mockingbird to embedded TV messages brought to you by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. This from InspiredEconomist.com. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has developed a well-deserved reputation for funding innovative programs revolutionizing solutions for social issues. Navigating a path that only for-profit businesses dare venture down, the Gates Foundation funds a wide variety of groundbreaking programs that challenge traditional peer-approved thinking on vaccines, agro-farming, and many other treatment-oriented solutions. However, a recent article in the New York Times covered yet another strategy that they are pursuing, collaborative message placement in mainstream television programming. It's not an accident, it's called programming. These are not your average public service announcements donated by networks, but rather a longer-term initiative that strives to create plot lines that will help disseminate accurate information on topics that are widely misunderstood. The objective is to use entertainment content as a vehicle for educating mainstream audiences on topics such as HIV/AIDS and education in the hopes of influencing public views and behaviors. Bill and Melinda Gates, they aren't just at work giving yummy vaccines to brown kids around the world. They're embedding messages in television shows. We recently covered, of course, the strange little piece that leaked out from Fox News about how they implant political messages into their shows. They admit it. They say they're going to do it. They say they're going to keep doing it. So whether it's, again, the phony anthropogenic man-made global warming ideas put into The Simpsons and all kinds of other Fox TV shows, we now see that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation's involved in putting messages in shows like ER, which I believe just ended its long run on television. Started, of course, by the recently deceased Michael Crichton, who, in one of his last books, State of Fear, wrote this crazy book about how a fictional environmental crisis would lead a bunch of foundation-funded kids to basically become the Green Squad. Crazy sci-fi, that'll never happen. One headline, Progressive Talk Radio Dies in Florida. That's from radioornot.blogspot.com. And of course, it always seems that supposed Progressive Talk Radio just doesn't really do that well. But also, of course, as mentioned, I believe, in the new issue of Vanity Fair, which we're going to get to quite a bit later, there's an article in there that, of course, notes that the dirty secret about right-wing talk radio is that most of the audience is 67 or older. But again, from the Deutsche Press Agency, the New York Times has threatened to shut down the Boston Globe. The New York Times company has threatened to shut down the Boston Globe unless the Globe's unions agree to $20 million in cost-cutting measures. The demands were made during a 90-minute meeting between Times and Globe executives in the newspaper's 13 unions. The concessions include pay cuts, terminating the company's pension contributions, and eliminating lifetime job guarantees. This, according to Daniel Totten, president of the Boston Newspaper Guild, the Globe's biggest union. The Globe, the Boston Globe, which began publishing in 1872, was sold to the New York Times Company in 1993. Threatening them, leaning on them, basically saying, cut pay, fire people, get rid of pensions and guarantees, or we'll kill you. There's another article in the new Vanity Fair, and this just reminds me about the current head of the New York Times family empire, Sulzberger, I believe is the name, and there's an article about how he's basically running the company into the ground. But the last media note here on Mockingbird Media and embedded messages from Wikinews, Quiznos restaurant chain airs controversial commercial. I do not have a video or a clip from said commercial, but in reading quickly about it, it basically sounds like it's filled with homoerotic imagery where a toaster is taunting guys, telling them to, you know, put your big 12-inch meat in me. Something like that. That won't play well in Peoria. Now it's time for the 409 News Purge. I always kind of apologize to you whenever I have to post up these big, ugly lists of headlines. It's because there's too much to go over. I don't have the hours in the day to fully flesh out all the insane news that's swirling around. So I post them all up. They're on the record. They're in the show. And they're there for you. So let's start at the top of the 409 News Purge, 409 being, of course, April 9th, yesterday, the News Purge, starting with Obamasiah and the Apostles of War. Poll finds that the nation is the most polarized it's been in decades, now, of course, under Obama. This article from McClatchy News Service calls it being the most polarized. However, I saw other articles, I believe citing the same poll, saying everybody loves Obama. Cybersecurity bill will give Obama dictatorial power over the Internet. That's from InfoWars, and again from them, setting the stage for Obama's control over the Internet. Electricity grid in U.S. penetrated by spies. WorldNet Daily is asking, will this new cybersecurity bill give Obama control of the Internet? We recently, of course, had, you know, Mother Jones, I think, asking the question, you know, should Obama control the Internet? Not sure if we've covered that or we will cover it in a moment. But just like Bush, Obama has moved to block the challenge to the wiretapping program. That's from Raw Story. For a little bit more on that, about how Obama has sided with Bush on wiretaps, it's, of course, Overman.
During his run for the presidency, Barack Obama, who taught constitutional law at the University of Chicago, argued strongly against the Bush administration use of executive authority, including its self-justification's rationalization of the warrantless wiretapping of American citizens. Our fifth story on the countdown, that was then, this is now, President Obama's Justice Department, now not just defending Bush officials from lawsuits surrounding National Security Agency domestic spying, but seeking to expand the government's authority by making it immune from any legal challenge regarding wiretapping. Ever. Welcome to Change You Cannot Believe In, or sue over the case, Juul versus NSA. Five plaintiffs who contend that AT&T illegally transmitted information about their phone habits to the NSA. Attorney General Holder's Justice Department arguing a lot of things, including something called the state's secrets privilege, the executive branch's standard go-to move to protect classified information.
Change. I can't fucking believe it. Turkey foiled a plot to assassinate Obama while he was recently abroad. Of course, first in London for the big G20, where they're setting up global currency for us all. And then when they hopped over to the NATO summit in Strasbourg, France, and we'll get to some of the destruction and mayhem there, and perhaps who was behind it. Turkey foiled plot to assassinate Obama. That's from the Jerusalem Post. Syrian man arrested in the plot. That's from the Deutsche Press Agency. Robert Gates has pushed for a radical overhaul of the Pentagon arsenal. That's from Danger Room, from Military.com. However, senators are wary of the cutbacks to the much-troubled future combat systems. That's, of course, basically a computerized, networked army. But I don't think we've seen the last of it. Obama wants another $83 billion for Afghan-Iraq. That's from CNN. Pentagon accused of pig victimization, or DARPA blows up pigs to test armor. That's from Russia Today. Another strange animal note, this from the political ticker blog on CNN, White House has been hit by a swarm of bees. So maybe that is a little bit of the pestilence we mentioned earlier. Hillary Clinton notes that the U.S. is committed to ratifying the so-called Law of the Sea Convention, and you should read more about that at TerraDaily.com. Red Cross medics say, or rather, reports say that Red Cross medics joined in on the CIA torture sessions, and of course we've hit that before, doctors were involved on the CIA pressure. But, of course, CIA no longer using secret prisons, claims the new head, Leon Panetta. That's from the AFP. Obama's now also pushing to start making 12 million illegal immigrants legal. That's from the New York Times. Well, we also note that Americans are denounced as terrorists. So whether you're a Ron Paul staffer being detained and interrogated by the TSA, or if you're on any of these local new, threat assessment fusion center reports about, you know, if you like Ron Paul or if you're a libertarian or if you like the Second Amendment or even talk about the Constitution, you might be an extremist. And again, let me just say, like I've been talking about the murder and mayhem contagion for several weeks now, I've been saying for several months, if not going on a year, that if and when the Democrats came back into power, you would see the shift back to the 90s-style homegrown enemies. The Timothy McVeighs, the David Koreshes, the crazy constitutional wackos. And we're already there. You know, I don't know if the 100 days have even gone by yet. Obama's also looking at climate engineering. That's from Cryptogon.com. But, of course, the government is already geoengineering the environment. Again, they set these things up a long time in advance and then announce it to you later. Like, oh, we might screw with the atmosphere. They've been screwing with the atmosphere. So whether it's what they spray in the skies, and again, mainstream reports have covered chemtrails. They are real. Look up in the sky in Portland, Oregon, and it'll tell you it's real. So they've already been doing it for a long time. But of course, DigitalJournal.com notes that this method to cool the Earth's rapid warming is for emergency use only. The other thing, again, what a coincidence that Obama's plan to geoengineer the planet pretty much exactly mirrors the recent policy documents from the Council on Foreign Relations, talking about putting small particles in the atmosphere, geoengineering the atmosphere. What could possibly go wrong? I talked to my mom for a little while yesterday, and of course I always try and bring up some news or politics, not get too heavy and freak her out, but I asked her, you know, what have you been seeing in the news lately? What's caught your eye? She said, oh, I keep seeing this thing about Obama bowing to the king of Saudi Arabia. And he lied about it. They've tried to cover it up, saying that he didn't bow to King Abdullah. But if you click the link and watch the video, he bows to King Abdullah. The last note here on the Obamasiah and the Apostles of War. 10 Holy Cross priests object to an Obama invitation. That from the Associated Press, and they, of course, object to an invitation because he supports abortion rights. I won't get into the abortion discussion right now. It's part of the eugenics op. They're not going to get rid of it. It's the football they like us to fight over. Good or bad, love it or hate it, it's part of the eugenics op. So there, I did get into it. The second subheading on the 409 News Purge, of course, it's the Police State International. Virginia Fusion Center releases their homegrown terrorism document, and you can see it and you can download it, March 2009, Virginia Terrorism Threat Assessment. There's also a longer list of other Fusion Center reports. And again, they're all basically saying the same thing. If you believe in the Constitution, you're a radical extremist. Hundreds of troops are relocating to Fort Hood. That's from the Washington Times. But a story and a good note. And again, this shows that calling up local radio stations, sending some emails to local newspapers can actually get some shit moving. So originally, an InfoWars story on a checkpoint that was going to be coming up in D.C. Once it started to bring a little noise, and once the InfoWarriors started to call up the Tennessee police, the governor stepped in.
The Wyva Police Department had plans to conduct a seatbelt checkpoint on Saturday, April 4th, at Highway 64 within the city limits of Wyva. The checkpoint was planned to be in conjunction with Homeland Security and the 251st Military Police in Bolivar. After learning about this, I contacted Representative Johnny Shaw, who represents that area, asked you about this. Representative Shaw, you look into this, and can you tell me what you've learned and where this stands now?
I can. Actually, this has been canceled. Some calls were made to the governor's office about this on earlier today. this Friday. And, of course, the governor just simply said, I don't need another headache. and of course, it has been canceled. And I will say that it was a bad idea in the first place. I mean, during this climate and this day and time which we live, can you imagine the army stopping you for a seatbelt check? You know, so it really was a bad idea. I don't think it'll happen again because I think it would have frightened more people than it would have helped. And I'm glad the governor made the decision, and we will probably try to make this never happen again.
We'll follow up with you on that, sir, and find out what steps are taken to protect, to see that something like this the public is notified in the future.
Definitely we will, because the public should have been notified it was going to happen. And as I said, you know, with the climate that we live in now, if you can imagine your wife, my wife, a daughter, or even son driving on a situation like this, I mean, it could be a total panic. I don't know whose idea this was. It was a bad idea. And I'm going to make sure that I call all of the local authorities and ask them not to do this anymore. But if they should even attempt to make sure that they contact people like myself and make sure that people are notified as to what is going to happen.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, sir.
Whose idea was this? Most of the local and regional police in the last several years are, of course, being federalized. I'm sure this was no idea of this Tennessee police force. It's coming down from their policy papers. And it's nice to hear some people talking sense, saying, in this day and age, where you think we're going to have the military looking at people? Which you could take both ways and say, well, of course, in this day and age, this is exactly what's going on all over the place. But sensible people can say, this ain't Nazi Germany yet. And hopefully, peacefully, actively, if we oppose these things in our local levels, we can be the change we wish to see in the world. Back to the Police Day International headlines. Phoenix police raid the home of a blogger who was critical of them. That should make all of us quite nervous, myself included. That's from CarlosMiller.com. Phoenix police raid the home of a blogger who is critical of them. The Coast Guard was feeding the hungry in Philly. Of course, a nice little photo op for you. The military's here to take care of you. The FBI raided a Dallas ISP over a single user. And a lot of the tech experts say, I've never seen anything like this, that the FBI would raid an internet service provider over the actions of a single user. Two from the Washington Times on the recent detainment by the TSA of an official staffer from the Ron Paul organization, one of his Campaign for Liberty staffers, employee. He, I believe, was traveling with lots of paperwork and also with lots of money. The interesting update is that we do have the audio of this interrogation, and of course the TSA, undertrained thugs that they are, blustering around and talking their bullshit. So it's getting closer. There's also something impending again as we've seen this great new Democratic Congress come in. We've seen just lots of great legislation coming around. So whether it's, you know, the Food Act or the National Service Act or the National Emergency Centers Act, we now have the Mothers Act that, of course, will bring forced psychological testing, which all the Democrats want. They want you to be psychologically screened to see if you're fit to be a parent. A parent of tomorrow's children. You should check out Tomorrow's Children on Google Video. So that's the Mothers Act. We also have FEMA publishing some new reorganization details. That's from FCW.com, Federal Computer Week. A new article from Lee Rogers at RogueGovernment.com points out how, of course, Glenn Beck and the rest of them miserably fail in debunking the facts on the FEMA camp infrastructure. Again, we've talked for several weeks about how folks like Glenn Beck have been appropriating the language of constitutionalists and patriots, getting out in front of it. So, of course, they can be the face
of some supposed, you know, anti-Obama, anti-Democrat kind of movement. But again, people like Glenn Beck are no friend to you or this movement. He recently had on James Miggs of Popular Mechanics, one of the guys who's behind their 9/11 debunking. So they bring out James Miggs to debunk FEMA camps, which, again, you can't do. U.S. national security documents to be used in JFK terror plot trial. That's from Star Bro News. Video reveals, now we're getting a little international. We're jumping from the North American Union to the European Union. And again, more updates and lowlights from the recent summits. New video revealed that the G20 police assault on Ian Tomlinson pretty much led to his death. Journalist. Or maybe he was even just a newspaper seller. G20 police kill him. Ian Tomlinson dead. Riot cops killed newspaper seller at G20, so there you go. Buildings burn, tear gas flies outside the Strasbourg NATO summit. That's from a raw story. 60th NATO summit in Strasbourg marred by street battles and arson. That's from the Telegraph. However, from Paul Joseph Watson, black bloc provocateurs set Strasbourg hotel on fire. The question being, who benefits when black bloc anarchists bust the windows of Starbucks in the Battle of Seattle and then somehow disappear when the hammer falls? Agent provocateurs meant to infiltrate groups, cause violence, get out of the way. Again, problem, reaction, solution. They cause the problem to generate the reaction so that the cops can offer the solution. That being beating and tasing and pepper spraying and rubber bulleting, mainline, peace-loving men, women, old ladies, and children. UK residents challenging the all-seeing Google camera. That's from Cryptogon.com. UKID cards are closer than ever. That's from Morningstar Online. UK's top counterterrorism officer resigns after a security blunder. Also, how a Scotland Yard slip-up forced terrorism raids in Britain. One is from Time Magazine, the other is from the Washington Post. However, UK counterterrorism officer, top UK counterterrorism officer, a guy with the last name of Quick, I believe, was photographed carrying some documents. And when people looked at the photographs, it says, top secret, or something to that effect. So when that leaked out, they basically had to quickly jump on the information contained in those documents because it was going to leak out. So they forced terrorism raids that probably weren't ready to go, that I'm sure will be blundered and probably dismissed. We also have recent unrest in Moldova. Election in Moldova instigates rioting mob demanding a recount. That's from Wikinews. We also have a globalvoicesonline.org noting, of course, that bloggers cover protests better and a lot of other things better than the mainstream media. They, of course, ask questions and cover things the MSM will never do, or at least will be reluctant to do. Activists charged for inciting Twitter revolution. That's from Danger Room, and that's what seems to swirl around this Moldova uprising. Twitter revolution. So, you know about flash mobs. They're basically going to be enabled by things like Twitter, and that's, of course, why we need the new cybersecurity, and that's also why I worry we're going to see some sort of catalyzing event to the Internet, some kind of hack attack. And that'll be, again, the problem, reaction, solution that we need to control the Internet. Or they'll all just kind of toll road us off to Internet 2, where, of course, it'll be a lot faster and a lot better, but you won't be able to have your own websites. And all the biggies will have control. So we wonder, again, Moldova, is this a Twitter revolution or a foundation-funded color revolution? And lastly, Russia Today is asking who's actually behind this peaceful Moldovan outrage. So that's just a little bit on a story that I have not learned too much about yet. Again, it's got all the makings of what is really going on in the world. That is fake foundation-funded grassroots uprising interfacing with technology, interfacing with the mob. And again, that's how fascism works. It doesn't go top-down totalitarian, it goes bottom-up. It goes from unemployed activists and artists thinking they're working on a grassroots revolution, however it's shepherded and funded. It's happened many times. The economy crash now towards a global currency and world government. That is an amazing article on globalresearch.ca. I believe it's from F. William Engdahl or perhaps Stephen Lindman or even Michel Chosadovsky, one of the great minds behind Global Research, an amazingly long and well-sourced and documented article pretty much proving that we're on the road to a global currency and world government. Pentagon is, of course, prepping for economic warfare. That's from Politico.com. They're basically running war games about economic warfare. So I guess the race is on to see what the next big event will be. And of course they've got us, you know, waiting for the other shoe to drop. So will it be a food 9/11? A cyber 9/11? We don't know. Wells Fargo, of course, is expecting and reporting record profits. Of course, Wells Fargo, JP Morgan, and a handful of the other banksters and gangsters are the ones helping engineer and the ones benefiting from the new financial world order. So Wells Fargo is doing very well. Washington Mutual, on the other hand, not so much. New York City Mayor Bloomberg is going to cut 7,000 more jobs. That's from Press TV out of Iran. Cities collapsing throughout the U.S. That's from thecomingdepression.blogspot.com. Survivalist 2.0. People get ready for the worst. That's regular people get ready for the worst. That's from McClatchy. The Art of Survival. Essential skills for the post-apocalyptic world. That's from independent.co.uk. Another great one from InfoWars, Sacramento Tent City, an alternative to the control grid. I guess trying to put a nice spin on people having to move into tent cities. I guess the plus side is that you're actually, in a way, out from under the thumb of the man. Reality TV's latest disgusting wheeze, making U.S. workers compete to keep their jobs. That, thanks to my man Doug at BlacklistedNews.com. Alleged Iranian nuke smuggling plot involving New York City banks uncovered. That, of course, wouldn't be anything new. That actually comes from Fox News. Raw Story notes that 10,000-plus people overwhelmed a Manchester, New Hampshire job fair. And lastly, a link to a video for you where Alex Jones is on Russia Today, of course noting out that the U.S. is a puppet of private central bankers. The cyberspace war heading, growing threat from cyber attacks, says U.S. General. That's from Breitbart.com. Spies penetrate U.S. electric system. That's from Press TV. Power grid hackers probably got inside by attacking PCs. Thanks again, Bill Gates. That's from ComputerWorld.com. Cyber spies or solar storms, what is the real threat to the U.S. electrical grid? That's the question asked by the Honolulu Exopolitics Examiner. We also, interestingly, have the head of the National Reconnaissance Office resigning. Spy satellite agency head resigns. That's from DODBuzz.com. We, of course, note that right around September 11th, 2001, the National Reconnaissance Office was running a terror drill about hijacked planes crashing into buildings. It's just a coincidence, I'm sure. A couple notes of media memes. TV suicide takes actor from House to the White House. some guy got hired, some new gig at the White House, so they wrote it in that his character committed suicide, which is kind of strange and funny and fitting. The AP's desperate attempt to outlaw search engine links, that's from rushprnews.com, and that speaks to, I believe, we just had, of course, you know, the New York Times threatening the Boston Globe, we've got the Seattle Post-Intelligencer closing its doors, going to only online, we've got the Rocky Mountain News closing, we've got mainline print newspapers and old dinosaur media dying all around. So much like we've seen the record industry and the movie industry fight against the technology, that, of course, the best analogy I've ever heard for any of this is that the toothpaste is out of the tube. You can be like Metallica or the RIAA and sue your customers, but that ain't gonna work. So we do have some media trying to battle against basically bloggers posting their news for free. Two words for you, bitch. Fair use. Another great clip from The Onion. I'm not gonna play it. I've been a little onion heavy lately, so I'll spare you this time. However, I recommend you check out the hot new video game that consists solely of shooting people point blank in the face. It's called Close Range. Two last notes on the 409 News Purge. History mystery, my friends. Three Nazi confiscated works were found at the Hearst Castle. That's from the San Francisco Guardian. Of course, the Hearst Castle, William Randolph Hearst, synonymous with yellow journalism. Of course, you know, he cabled to his photographer when he went to look for the war that was going on in Spain. He said, there's nothing going on. He said, you supply the pictures, I'll supply the war. And, of course, William Randolph Hearst sent up brilliantly in Orson Welles' Citizen Kane. The last note on the history mystery here is kind of fitting. Again, it's Bad Friday, heading for Easter Sunday. Recently, from timesonline.co.uk, the Vatican says that those nasty Knights Templars hid the Shroud of Turin.
It's really interesting that this new evidence about the Turin Shroud has come to light. And of course it combines two great centres of conspiracy theories in our world today. One is the Vatican, and the other is the Knights Templar. And with this third element, the Turin Shroud, it's just the focus of so much speculation and controversy over the last few decades. With the Turin Shroud at the centre of this, this is a story that has absolutely everything. It's due to go on exhibition again next year, and that's going to be a fantastic exhibition, and no doubt will attract thousands and thousands of people from all over the world. So it's just in the interest of the Holy See coming up to Easter to let out more information that might support the belief of those who think the Shroud is genuine. A scientific radiocarbon test, as everyone knows, did cast out on the dating of the Shroud from the 1st century, from the death of Christ and the resurrection of Christ itself. But this new information seems to suggest that the evidence for the authenticity of the Shroud and the doubts that have been cast over the validity of the carbon dating test might have something to them. And once again, this is going to get scholars from all over the world, both within the Catholic Church and in the scientific community, arguing and contesting the Shroud. How old is it? Is it a medieval forgery? Or does it genuinely come from the time of Christ himself? Is that an image of Jesus himself on that burial cross? And if it was ever to be proved that it was Jesus himself, it would be such a credit to her and to the whole Christian community.
It's getting strange now. Religious conspiracies and the Knights Templar and the hidden Shroud of Turin. So let's get even stranger and dig a little more into crazed occult conspiracies. Backwards speech, Obama and the Antichrist. This from Raw Story, Raw Replay, MSNBC, and RedTape.ru. People who think President Obama is the Antichrist say they hear things like serve Satan when they play his speeches backwards. Rachel Maddow takes a look at what other things might be learned by playing other people's speeches backwards.
Did you know that if you play selected portions of Barack Obama's speeches backwards, you can hear the real truth about him, which is, of course, that he has pledged himself to Satan. It's true. It has to be. I saw it on the YouTube. All right, here's how it goes. In his acceptance speech, when he won the presidential nomination, Obama repeated a phrase twice so as to be heard over the cheering.
I accept your nomination for President of the United States. Let me express...
Okay, hold it right there. This is part where he pledges himself to Satan. If you play back that line, let me express, if you play it backwards, it's just too dramatic. It's too dramatic. You have to hear it yourself. You will be shocked. Shocked, I said.
Let me express self-Satan.
Yes, that certainly is creepy. I found this online on YouTube today thanks to boingboing.net, who pointed to this clip online as an example of the Obama is the Antichrist stuff that has persisted remarkably since the campaign. And it's true, if you are willing to log through YouTube and online right-wing world, there is a ton of this Obama Antichrist stuff, way more than you think there would be. Did you know, for example, that yes, we can is really just backwards speak for thank you, Satan?
Yes, we can. Thank you, Satan. Thank you, Satan. Thank you, Satan.
Thank you, Satan. Intrigued by this obviously irrefutable evidence that the president is secretly inducing America to accidentally give backwards verbal shout-outs to Satan, we here at The Rachel Maddow Show applied this I can play it backwards technique to see what else we could learn of the secret plots and schemes and musings of important cult figures.
That attitude created the unresponsive bureaucracies of big government in the first place. And that's not change we can believe in.
You have a definite agreement by running, not picking my running weight.
Read my lips.
Listen, me that not George W.
It's time for a couple of holy mackerel stories in today's news. Happy opening day, everyone. And remember, Paul is dead.
Backward speech, Obama, and the Antichrist. This is, of course, all completely fucking ridiculous. Everybody knows that Prince William is the Antichrist anyway. The interesting thing about this, and I don't poo-poo it completely, although at first it does remind me that in my religious upbringing at the Emmanuel Baptist Church in Fayetteville, West Virginia, when we would have traveling speakers come through, my favorites were always the ones who talked about the evils of media and rock music and movies. And I remember this guy played Another One Bites the Dust by Queen, backwards. And in the part of the chorus, when you play it backwards, when, of course, you're told what it says, it does really kind of sound like he says, start to smoke marijuana. Again, the interesting thing about this, without my little Queen digression there, having the mainline left gatekeeper folks like Olbermann or Maddow shilling for Microsoft and General Electric on MSNBC, they know that these things are ridiculous, and they use these things to paint any criticism of Obama as being completely ridiculous and you're a right-wing religious nut wacko. Now, my man Clyde Lewis, I believe, has played some of those clips, and there are people who do research on backward speech. There are also people who say, again, that Prince William is the Antichrist. He will be 33 in 2012 and will assume the throne. An interesting comment from someone named Lou posted at the bottom of this backward speech, Obama and the Antichrist posting. I won't read the whole thing, but it basically goes into the idea that, of course, the idea of the rapture is a relatively new thing. in Christianity, the idea perhaps being to basically get the flock to lie down. And unfortunately, Christians that I know quite well look around at what's going on today and say, well, praise Jesus, things are getting bad. That just means he's that much closer to coming back. Whether you believe in Jesus Christ or not, if people followed his teachings like they claim that they do, we wouldn't be in the shit that we're in. And I believe in the Bible, there's not really any excuse ever given for you to not fight corruption. And it also says that, you know, you won't ever know when Christ's return will be. You're not supposed to know when his second coming is. So I suppose that's all fitting again here for the Bad Friday Easter weekend. And there's more to go into, but I should keep moving so I can keep this episode somewhere under a few hours.